ik jullie aandacht geef, alsjeblieft. Well, thank you. Honorable members. Honorable staff, I'm delivering your quickly your breakfast. Good morning, honorable members. Honorable Deputy Minister, thank you very much for coming. I think we'll need an ambulance this morning. Well, someone is coughing too much. Carry weight. The department, does a lot of work, and maybe the Deputy M and the DG, we could find a way of saying we're receiving the reports, but maybe until we get to the reports, so say how do we enhance these reports? I know they do reflect the work that the department is doing, and also we owe some visits to some of the areas that the department has visited, the service they call the service delivery points, am I right? Yes. Where the department has been there, and we got a report. We still need to visit those reports, I mean those areas ourselves, to see whether those people have since improved. The department also owes us the reports on the management performance assessment tool, MPET report. Still owes us that report. We had initially scheduled for the 6th of August. Yeah. But I guess that maybe now it's almost ready. And that is a very interesting report. But the quarterly report, honorable members, I think that will tell us that in terms of the annual performance plan, how the department has performed in relation to those targets that were set by the department at the beginning of the year. And perhaps maybe it's early days to say whether it will be an indication whether how throughout the year the department will perform. But again, I would like to extend a special word of welcome to the Deputy Minister and ask him perhaps to address us on the report. Thank you, SDM. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the report is straightforward, and you might, in our own opinion, say maybe it's boring, as we have used the word, but it's one of those matters of compliance in terms of accountability standards that we are putting our country on the map. And also the issues of transparency that we ought to project government so that the society, the nation, can then appreciate that when questions and assessments are made or peer review mechanisms are made by the peer review mechanism of the AU, when government is asked around compliance and around transparency and around whether it does account to Parliament, we must not be found wanting. And therefore, I would just really say, let's not treat it as just boring, but it's something that one day you will then stand up and shine and say South Africa is rated among the nation as the best model of governance systems and its accountability is as transparent as that, and indeed Parliament is being taken seriously, and Parliament does receive reports, and Parliament does consider those particular reports, and so forth. Because don't wait for when the day when the report says that there's an underspending or there's overspending. Receive reports as and when they are supposed to be presented to Parliament. And so the DG will therefore be presenting a report, which is an improvement from last year's, where last year obviously there were issues around the issues of underspending. We can confidently today report that we are on the recovery and we are better positions than last year in comparison. So if with those few remarks then, Chair, I see this report as profound. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe before and then we give over to the DG, I must withdraw this, what you call SDM. I must withdraw this win, boring. I think that it's inappropriate word to use, because you're right that South Africa depends a lot on the work of this, what you call a department. So surely you're quite right. And I think that now it's really, it's unfortunate word to use the M. I repeat again, because one interesting thing that this term brought is performance monitoring and evaluation. I think that as South Africa, I think we're privileged to be able to do this kind of work. And obviously, it is early days to say that we could be bought. No, I think it's early days. And evaluating our policies that we are implementing, whether they are making impact on the lives of our people. Maybe at this stage, then I can allow the DG to present.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues. Firstly, I'd like to introduce the team from the Department. And firstly, I'd like to apologize for our Chief Financial Officer, Peter Pretorius. Unfortunately, he had an armed robbery at his house, so he took a couple of days' leave and he couldn't make it today. On my left is Clement Magali, who's the head of the DG's office and responsible for planning and reporting and managing the quarterly reporting process in the department that we're going to be talking about today. And on his left is Kajol Surtu, who's our head of human resource management in the department. We've just included a couple of introductory slides just for background information and to remind members of the key elements of our APP and our key areas of focus. We've divided our work into four main areas. The first one is monitoring and evaluation of national priorities, where the focus is currently on the 12 outcomes. Monitoring implementation of the current delivery agreements for the 12 outcomes, and also now developing the medium-term strategic framework, which is going to provide the basis for the outcomes in the next 5 years and is going to be the first five-year implementation plan for the National Development Plan. The second box there is our work as the custodian of monitoring and evaluation in government, where we focus on developing monitoring and evaluation capacity and systems across government. And in that regard, we're managing the national evaluation system, which consists of evaluation plans for priority, evaluating priority programs, and working with departments to implement those plans and implement the evaluations. We're working with departments to improve data quality and information management. We have a number of training and capacity building initiatives for M&E across government and departments, and we've produced quite a wide range of policies and guidelines for monitoring and evaluation as well, which are on our website and which we are included in our capacity building programs with departments. Then the third row there, program four, is where we are looking at the monitoring individual departments and more recently started to look at municipalities as well. And here, because we're looking at departments' service delivery to the public in terms of the key priorities of the outcomes, in this area, when we look at individual departments, we're focusing on the quality of management practices. And that's the management performance assessment that the chairperson referred to, which we're currently finalizing the report. It's currently in the system to go to Cabinet on the assessments of last year for all the national and provincial departments, and after it's gone through Cabinet, we'll be forwarding it to the committee. And then finally, our last area of work is looking at frontline service delivery, looking at monitoring government from the viewpoint of citizens obtaining services. And there we have several initiatives, including the presidential hotline. We provide support for the president's Siyahlola monitoring program of visits to communities. And we do our own unannounced visits to service delivery sites together with officials of the Office of the Premier. And we've recently also started a citizen-based monitoring program. Just to recap, the changes this year from last year, our work is very much the same this year as it was last year. We really only have two fairly significant changes this year from last year. And the first is that we've extended the assessment of the quality of management practices in national and provincial departments to municipalities, and we started our municipal assessment program or MAT program where we are looking at municipalities, and we've developed a tool to assess the management practices of municipalities and also to assess the quality of basic service delivery such as roads, water and sanitation in municipalities. That's just at an initial stage. We're still in the pilot stage of that. I think our target for this year is to pilot it with 10 municipalities, and that work is in process. And the other new initiative for the current year is the citizen-based monitoring program as part of our frontline service delivery monitoring, which is also in the initial phases. The concept document for that program is in the system to go to Cabinet, and we are at the same time starting to pilot this kind of monitoring with several departments, including the South African Police Services and the Health Department, Social Development. Our budget for this financial year is summarized in this table. A key change which has happened this financial year in terms of the structure of the department is that we've streamlined the structure of the department and reduced the number of programs or branches that we had from 4 to 3. And our M&E systems branch has now been dissolved, and the functions that it was performing have been absorbed into other branches of the department. And that's the main reason why there's these planned environments in this table. is not because of any changes in plans, it's just because of movement between different programs because of the structural change in the department. This slide explains the environments. As I've mentioned, we abolished Program 3 and we absorbed its functions into other programs. Because we did that after the finalization of the budget, we have to still run with the budget program 3 for this financial year. So we've had to have the money in the budget program 3 and then via the money to the other programs where the work is happening. The key work that was done in the M&E Systems branch, which has been moved to other branches, is that the M&E Systems branch was managing the Program of Action, which is the website on the Program of Action in which progress is reported on the 12 outcomes against the delivery agreements. And we thought it was more effective and efficient for that to be managed under the outcomes branch where the data is generated to go onto the Program of Action. There was also a GIS or Geographic Information Systems function in that data systems branch, and that's been moved to our information technology section. And the other part of that branch, which has been closed down, was the Chief Directorate for Policy Development and Capacity Building across government for M&E, and that's been merged with our program for monitoring individual departments. We did indicate to the committee when we presented on our fourth quarter report for last financial year that we would be requesting permission from Treasury for rollovers for two projects which started late in the financial year and which weren't completed. That is the project that we're doing on the development of norms and standards for concurrent functions that we're doing on behalf of FOSAD in the interests of seeing whether or not norms and standards can be better used for concurrent functions in order to improve performance for concurrent functions. And also we also started the process of producing the 20-year review late last year, and we asked for permission to roll over the money that we budgeted for that to this year as well. Since then, we've received notification from Treasury that our requests for rollovers were not approved. So some of the environments that we're making we have to make in order to make money available to complete these two projects. We have, however, been able to raise quite a substantial amount of money from donors, such as DFID and GTZ and Canadian Aid, and we are managing our work in such a way that even though the request for rollovers was not approved by Treasury, the work that we plan to do will still be done because we'll use the donor funding to cover some of the work that we would have done had we gotten the approval for rollovers from Treasury. This table shows our budget per program and economic classification. And this table shows the primary cost drivers per program in the department. Those are really for information. I think the most important slide with regard to our expenditure chairperson is this slide that I have up now. What we've tried to do with this slide is to show, to compare our expenditure in the first quarter this year with the first quarter last year. Members will recall that last year we had a March expenditure spike, and we also had an under expenditure of 8% at the end of the financial year. And when we came to the committee to report on our fourth quarter for last financial year, we indicated that we gave the reasons why that March spike occurred, and we indicated that for the reasons given, that we didn't think that would reoccur this year. And the reasons given were primarily because we started with the evaluation program after the start of the financial year. The evaluations program was new, and that by this year we would now be in a regular cycle of evaluations, and we would therefore have more expenditure on evaluations in the first few months of the financial year. And that is indeed what has happened. You can see from the graph that it's the next graph which compares. This graph compares the 13-14 and the 12-13. You can see from the graph that the green lines, the brighter green lines, show our expenditure for April, May, June, and July for 13-14, and the lighter browner lines show our expenditure for those months last financial year. So you can see, for example, in June, our expenditure was about double this financial year than it was in June last financial year. And we expect this trend to continue, and therefore we expect that large March spike from last financial year, the light brown bar, will not be there this financial year. The expenditure will be much smoother across the financial year. We are going back to this previous graph. It shows the light brown lines show our original projected expenditure, and the light green lines show our actual expenditure. We're still not completely there yet, and that you can see from the green line that we're still a little below our projected. So we're still not where we should be in terms of spending as we projected. We're a little bit below, but it's much better than last year, and we think that it'll improve further during the year, and that we will be very close. The green line and the brown line will be very close by the as we move through the financial year. This shows our expenditure and commitments as at 30 July. So on compensation, of course, we're 100% committed. On goods and services, by the end of July, we've spent 25%, committed 36%. Committed here means contractually committed in terms of orders placed and contracts entered into. We still have 39% to commit, and capital assets, we'd spent 22%, committed 15%, and still had 63% to commit. But we do think that on capital assets, plans are in place. We are managing it. We are monitoring the work of our information technology section. They have got the necessary plans in place and procurement processes in place that we're confident that 63% will be committed and spent before the end of the financial year. The outstanding ICT orders relate to our disaster recovery center and equipment for a second DPME building, which we've asked Public Works to obtain for us because we don't have sufficient space in the portion of the union building that we're occupying, and we plan to move part of our staff into a second building outside the union buildings. We've asked Public Works to expedite our process, but so far it hasn't been moving as quickly with Public Works as we would have hoped. So we're monitoring that closely. And we would have hoped to have had the additional office space by now. We've budgeted to have moved, I think, by now. So we're probably going to have some savings on our budgeted rental, which will be reallocated to evaluations if necessary. Turning to the filling of posts. As at the end of June this year, We had 202 funded posts, of which 181 were filled, 90% of our funded posts filled. To date, at the time of reporting, we have 190 posts filled out of 206 funded posts. Perhaps if I can just explain this, Chairperson, our number of funded posts increases during the year because we've managed our personal budget in such a way that we've planned to fill positions at different times in the year. So we've planned to, for some posts to become funded later in the year, and some posts became funded from the beginning of the financial year. So some of the posts are not funded for the full financial year. So as we progress during the... they're permanent positions. But they don't have to be funded for the whole financial year. In other words, we're planning a process of recruitment and in stages, and also our personal budget doesn't allow us to fill all the posts from the beginning of the financial year. So it only allows us to fill some of the positions later in the financial year. So we plan to advertise and fill some earlier in the financial year, and we've also planned to advertise and fill some later in the financial year. And that explains why our number of funded positions increases over the course of the financial year. So we're currently sitting at 92% post-filled of our funded positions. And then the table there shows for April, May, and June our position in terms of the filling of posts. It is a bit of a moving target, as you can see from the bottom of the table. While we're filling posts, we also have sometimes people leave the department because they get promotions or they get transferred to other departments, and occasionally people resign and get jobs elsewhere or in the private sector. So in terms of monitoring our vacancy rate, we need to monitor both our filling of posts and the turnover of staff in the department. But we've tried to capture both in this table. So our vacancy rate, I think the general guide in the public service is that you shouldn't have a vacancy rate more than 10%. You will always have some vacancy rate because you do have turnover. So we are endeavouring to keep our vacancy rate below 10% and even try and improve it to 5% if possible. This is an attempt to graphically represent our position in terms of our filling of our positions. The black line shows the total number of filled positions in the department. So in April, we had 177 filled positions. In May, we had 175. That would be explained by turnover of staff. And then it's increased to 181 in June, 183 in July, and 190 in August. And you can see the gradual increase in our number of funded positions in the lower part of the table, increasing from 197 at the beginning of the financial year to 209 by March next year. So we have a gradual process of recruitment to fill those posts during the course of the year. And you can see in the top row the appointments that we've been making from month to month, 5 in April, 2 in May, 7 in June, 2 in July, 7 in August. So as at the end of the quarter that we're reporting on, we had 21 posts vacant. 13 of those 21 positions are positions that have been previously filled in the department, but due to staff turnover and internal promotions and transfers, these posts became vacant. And 8 of those 21 vacant posts were new posts. And as at the 30th of June, all the new posts have been advertised, but some had not yet been filled, and we'd had some delays in terms of filling them, in terms of the reasons that we gave the last time we reported to the committee, such as that we do have delays in terms of the pre-employment security screening requirements. They are taking longer than we hope, because I think of the workload for the State Security Agency. And we had a couple of cases where We made offers to successful candidates, but they declined the offers, and then we had to re-advertise. So in conclusion, with regard to expenditure, after our March spike and our slight under-expenditure last financial year, we have introduced monthly expenditure monitoring meetings of top management, which has improved our expenditure planning and forecasting. Our expenditure in the first 3 months of this year is significantly better than last year, and we are on track to fully spend our budget by the end of March and to avoid the large March spike which we experienced last financial year. And we think if there are any savings in any areas, such as, for example, the money that we budgeted for rentals, that we are making contingency plans to be able to spend that, to buy that money within the rules of the PFMA, and to spend it in priority areas such as evaluations and performance assessments of municipalities. So, Chairperson, that's our expenditure report for the quarter. Turning now to our performance, to our report against the predetermined objectives and targets for the first quarter in our annual performance plan. For Program 1 administration, we have 17 targets for the first quarter in the APP. 10 of them were achieved, 5 partially achieved, and 2 not achieved. To focus on the partially achieved and not achieved, the targets not achieved were to review the policy and procedure on planning to align it with the electronic reporting system. That's an internal method. Our internal policy and procedure on our internal planning and align it with an electronic reporting system that we're putting in place to enable this quarterly reporting within the department. And the reason why that wasn't done in the first quarter is because the electronic reporting system was still in the testing phase and not yet fully deployed. That target will be achieved during the second quarter, we think. We also had a target to achieve 90% to 100% of our planned first quarter drawings. To spend 90% to 100%. We spent 74.4% of the drawings, and that relates back to the graph which I showed earlier, which shows us being slightly below the green line, slightly below the brown line there. Partially achieved. We said that we would achieve at least 25% of the activities in the communication plan. We underachieved a little in that regard, but we think that by the end of the year we will have implemented all the activities in the communication plan. Some of them will be done in the second quarter rather than the first quarter. We had a target of developing a 3-year strategic and annual audit plan and submitted to the audit committee for approval. It was developed by the end of June, but was only presented to the audit committee in July rather than in June. And we had a target of maintaining less than a 10% vacancy rate on average over the quarter. But I think in 1 month during the quarter it was 11%, so we were slightly over that target of 10%. We also had a target of achieving 20% of our workplace skills plan targets. That's for developing our internal staff skills by the end of the quarter. By the end of that quarter, 14% was achieved rather than the 20%. HR is taking measures to ensure that the workplace skills plan is fully implemented by the end of the year and to accelerate the implementation of the training, of the planned training in the department. We had a target of developing draft national M&E IT guidelines and producing a plan for workshops. The draft guidelines were put in place, but the plan for the workshops has now been put in place in this quarter. That was due to the ICT section being very busy with the migration process during the first quarter from the presidency's system to our system. Turning then to our outcomes monitoring branch, we had 16 targets for the quarter, of which 10 were achieved and 6 partially achieved. One target was erroneously placed in the first quarter, which was to review the APPs. It can't be done in the first quarter. So we didn't include that in our total first quarter targets, but it will be done later in the financial year. The partially achieved targets were to engage with provinces on the content of the municipal assessment process and implementing it. We wanted to pilot it in 2 provinces and engage with those provinces, but the engagement only took place in July rather than before the end of June. We had a target of having a concept for a provincial evaluation plan approved in at least 3 provinces. By the end of June, we'd had them approved in 2 provinces, and we are optimistic that the third province, the Free State, will approve their provincial evaluation plan shortly. We had a target of producing at least 1 new guideline during the quarter to support evaluations, and they produced 5 new guidelines, but they only brought them to me to sign off after the end of the quarter, but those have now been signed off and finalized, put on our website. We had a target of 2 national briefings or trainings and concept modes for 70 people trained to be held, and we trained a little bit less in the quarter than we'd planned, 46 people rather than 70, but we will meet our targets in terms of training of people on evaluation during the year. This training relates to evaluation. We had a target of 3 evaluations reports being approved by the evaluation steering committees, in which DPME is a member. 2 evaluation reports were approved. There's been delays in some evaluations. As you know, Chairperson, we're doing the evaluations in partnership with departments, and in order to get ownership, we need to maintain a balance between the speed of the evaluation and ensuring ownership of the process as we go along within the department, so that we can be sure that the recommendations of the evaluations are implemented. We're generally optimistic about our plans for when the evaluations were completed, but the national evaluation plan is being implemented. I think there's currently about 20 or 23 evaluations underway with departments. We didn't bring today, but we have previously submitted to you a progress report on all the evaluations, and we can resubmit a new progress report on the evaluation showing exactly which programs are being evaluated in which departments and the status, the current status of each of those evaluations. Perhaps, Chairperson, we might like to also have if I could suggest that we might want to have a meeting with the committee focusing on evaluations to talk about progress and to look at the process. We also had a target to produce a quarterly progress report for all the outcomes and make it publicly available on the POA website within 1 month of the POA reporting week. That was partially achieved, and that we did meet that target for 7 or 8 of the outcomes, but for the remaining outcomes, we put up the progress a few weeks later. And that's because we had to work with the departments to address some inconsistencies and quality problems with some of the reports. Turning to our budget program for M&E systems, this is the program which is now being relocated to other parts of the department. There were 5 targets, and all of those targets were achieved for the quarter. Turning to our public sector oversight program, there were 18 targets, 15% of which were achieved, 1 was partially achieved and 2 not achieved. The two targets, two of the targets related to us providing secretarial support to the DG and the presidency for the assessment of directors general of departments, but as a cabinet decision had been taken that we should do that. But that implementation of that decision was dependent on the issuing of a new policy by the DPSA, and the policy wasn't issued, so we weren't able to implement those targets. The two targets which were not achieved... No. So the current system of the secretariat being provided by the Public Service Commission is continuing for this year, and we are not providing this function this year because... We can only start providing the function once the new policy is issued. The two targets which were not achieved, we had a target of having a community-based monitoring knowledge-sharing workshop by the end of June, we decided to delay that knowledge sharing workshop because our work with the police and health and social development was not quite ready yet in terms of getting the pilot sites ready for the community-based monitoring program. We also had a target of having service delivery complaints trends report produced by the end of June. This relates to the trends reports from the presidential hotline, we've had a bit of a delay in terms of securing specialist research capacity in that regard, but we are confident that we will do that work still during this financial year. There was one partially achieved target in this program, and that is to... identify case studies and topics and produce three case studies. I think this is case studies for the hotline. Yes. Case studies related to the hotline. But that the case study plan has now been done, and the case studies in the process have been written up. So where citizens have raised an issue with the hotline, that they have a problem, and then we write up what happened after the citizen raised the issue, how it was resolved, so a case study of the responsiveness to the hotline and how the citizen's issue is resolved. So in summary, during the quarter, we achieved 40 of our 56 targets for the quarter, and partially achieved 12. So 92% were either achieved or partially achieved. Chairperson, we are confident that this will improve and that by the end of the year we will have at least 80% achievement of our targets as we did by the end of last financial year. It's quite often that when we're planning it, we're a bit optimistic as to how much we'll get done in the first quarter as opposed to the second or third quarters, and sometimes there's unforeseen circumstances which causes some movement of some things from the first quarter to the second quarter. If I could also just give a little bit of a, in addition to this report, which is quite technical and based on our APP, if I could also just mention a few more broadly progress that we've been, work that we've been doing the quarter and progress that we've been making. We have made very good progress with the presidential hotline in terms of improving the responsiveness of departments at national provincial level, including municipalities, to issues raised on the presidential hotline. The responsiveness rate is now over 90%. There's been a marked improvement, particularly at provincial level, in responsiveness. Over the last quarter, provincial responsiveness rate increased by 20%, which shows that there's been a lot of efforts by leadership at provincial level to improve responsiveness. Some of the targets that we achieved relate to the management performance assessments of national provincial departments. As you mentioned, Chairperson, in your introductory remarks, the committee has been eagerly awaiting the report on the last assessments. The report has been completed. It was for last year's assessments. Members will recall that this is an annual assessment cycle, so we do one report per annum. So the first year that we did it was the year before last, so we did one report on the 2011-12-13 assessments, where we assessed 103 national and provincial departments. Last year we assessed all 156 national and provincial departments in the 12-13 year, and it's that report which has been finalized and is in the cabinet system and will serve before cabinet very shortly, and we then intend to submit it to the portfolio committee and would request the opportunity to appear before the committee to present the results of that report, the results of those assessments of national and provincial departments. I've talked a little bit about evaluations. Although we haven't completed as many evaluations as we had initially planned, by now we do have a large number of evaluations underway, and we think that the evaluation system is progressing well. It's not easy to do evaluations in collaboration with other departments, and we are quite pleased that we've managed to get quite a large number of evaluations underway as a collaborative effort with other departments. Our frontline, quite a few of our targets which we've achieved relate to our frontline service delivery monitoring program. That is progressing. It's an ongoing program. This year we've largely been focusing on revisiting sites where we found problems last year during the visits to check whether the departments have addressed the issues which we identified in last year. And Chairperson, we've noted your request that we inform you of those visits and that we invite the portfolio committee to accompany us on some of those visits, and we will revert to you in that regard. Chairperson, we've also been very busy with the 20-year review. Some of our targets relate to that we've reported as achieved. It hasn't been completed yet. We have a target date of completing it by November. That's also a collaborative effort with both national departments and provincial governments. We've also been tasked by the President to work with this National Planning Commission on implementation plans for the National Development Plan. And in that regard, we've been very busy working with departments in developing the medium-term strategic framework for 2014 to 2019. We did have a target of presenting a first draft of that to the July Cabinet Lahotla, and that was done. So we do have drafts of all 14 outcomes, key focus areas in the National Development Plan, and we're engaging with departments to include the indicators and targets in their strategic plans for the next period and their 2014-15 APPs. So that what we're trying to do is to ensure that departments' individual plans reflect the National Development Plan and the targets and the key activities in the National Development Plan. And the reason why we're doing that is we think that that's a very important way in which we can engender a high level of confidence both in government and outside of government that the National Development Plan is being implemented and will be implemented comprehensively. And then finally, Chairperson, we have also been working further on the government-wide monitoring and evaluation system, and in terms of developing a general government policy basis for monitoring and evaluation, and that work is progressing, and we hope in due course to also bring documents to the committee in that regard. Thank you very much.
Union building is not hot, so you can see.
that Ian and the team. Honourable members, there you are. Honourable Dr. Van Dijk, Honourable Mufulo, Honourable Snare. I'll come this way. Starting, okay, Honourable Harald Blom and Honourable Swart. Honourable Dr. Van Dijk.
Chairperson, thank you very much.
I want to ask about the Parados. There was no report about the Parados.
Chairperson, thank you, and also thank the department for the presentation. Chairperson, I just want to get more clarity on this page 5 of the presentation. This is a new department, a newly developed department, and we know that, you know, we have spoke about that, you know, that they are still busy to find themselves and also to establish the department well. And one can understand that there will be changes. But coming to this budget program 3, that's been abolished or will be abolished from the next financial year forward. I want to ask the question, one should imagine that very proper and comprehensive homework would have been done, you know, with the establishment of this department's network, and specifically also the budget schedule and the different programs, the different items, etc. And I just find it strange that this program, you know, all of a sudden has been abolished almost just after it was established. And we also find in this presentation that there was not a rollover. Now, I want to know, you know, is there any link between the fact that rollovers, the rollover was not allowed, and we see that it will be abolished as from April 2014, but we must realize that the money will already be spent in this financial year, the 12-13 financial year. So it is just paperwork for the year from next year onwards. So the money has already been allocated to the other programs. It will be spent in this financial year. And the question also arises, you know, with the vanished of this specific program, what does it mean in terms of the rest of the logistics? For instance, the personnel, the administration costs, I see it's almost in total 17 million that will be removed from 3 to 1, 2 and 4, the other programs. So I've got a question also about the capacity and also about the rest of the logistics. What will happen to that? And will it have any effect on the current employment of the department? Chairperson, in short, why all of a sudden the change? Is there any link between the not approved of the rollovers, and will the capacity and the division be in such a way that there will still an optimum consumption and use of the appropriated money of that 17 million that is going along with this with this move of the program? Thank you.
I just want to understand then when the I want to look at slide 3, citizen-based monitoring, because they've taken it from program 3 to program 4, that will it be adequately, will it be done really if they shift it from one program to another? And on the annual performance plan, the department has indicated that 100% of the performance agreements will be concluded. But when I look at the report now, it's very silent on that one. So I just want to check that. And then, again, on the annual performance plan, it says, the report says they spend 74%. So I would like to understand that that committee, if it's there within the department, what is it doing in terms of addressing this underspending? And will the programs that Program 3 has been shifted from to 2 and 4, is there any, do they have capacity, you know, to be able to deal with those shifts? Or with the functions of Program 3 being shifted, is it not a little bit more? I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is, you know, with currently with government focusing on outcomes, okay, and those outcomes not necessarily being able to be achieved by a single department, but by departments working with each other. Measuring these outcomes also appear to be difficult, given the current framework available to the departments to work within that's prescribed by Treasury. And then complicating this, in my opinion, would also be a lack of a standardized government-wide IT system that is targeted at monitoring outcomes and measuring these against determined APP targets, which would also then have a significant impact on the implementation of an effective PMDS system. That system is also reliant on accurately measuring targets to be able to assist the development of a institution or a department. You know, and currently we're working within a framework that is prescribed to by Treasury. I hear that you're saying that you are looking at ME IT guidelines, but I'm not sure to what extent you can override or prescribe those against what Treasury has. So, in your opinion, how can these challenges be addressed?
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps my question may be answered. I was a few minutes out of this meeting. But according to the annual performance plan, thus far only 10 of the targets has been reached. What is the cause of delay for this process? And then my other question is, there's 21 people that was not more with the department, or were not more with the department. What is the reason for the turnover there? And is there any people that is disciplined here, or what is the problem? And then my third question, Chair, is about that I saw here that the concept, the provincial evaluation plans are, two of them are successful. The third one, the Free State, what is the reason, or the reasons that this plan is not approved? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khaled Blom. No, you're right, that's some of the questions. The one when we were outside, the one that was responded. But I'm sure they will again assist you. Honorable Swart, I've got a nice badge.
Thank you, thank you, Chair. Yes, I missed my Coca-Cola cap, but it's okay. Chair, just two short questions. I heard them saying, the department saying that they will be short on their budget, but they will cover that with donor funding of some $19 million. I just wanted to know what the sustainability is of getting donor funds. Is it the multi-year allocation by these organizations? And if so, how many years? And are we likely to get this every year for some time to come? Welcome, of course, but you know, I just want to know whether it won't affect the department and its finances eventually sometime in the future. And then, you know, the silence on the question of the submission of performance agreements, and I'm just wondering whether you could just bring us up to speed as far as that's concerned.
Okay, let me just add a few comments and say compared with last year, there's an improvement on the targets. However, I also, just like with colleagues who are questioning program 3, maybe I just some more understanding on program 3. Which slide says program 3 has been abolished? Slide 5. Now, or is it ME Systems Coordination and Support, which has been abolished, or on our organizational structure allocated? I mean, the what are the implications of abolishing this program? The department is performance monitoring. An evaluation. Now we are abolishing that now. Perhaps is there a new threat plan now that you're coming up with? You know, yeah. But the I think that. Maybe, Tichy, you're right that with the progress, I think that there's progress. You know, but I think that, Honorable DM, they say the devil is in the detail. The APP says there will be, the report says that we have started with municipal. Performance. I didn't leave you out, Honorable Mashikone. You didn't have your hand up. Okay. I think that we hear that something has been done about municipal performance and service delivery. But I think that we didn't hear to what extent, how much work has been done on that. According to the APP, there were supposed to be 3 pilot sites. Yeah, how far are we? And secondly, is the other thing that really at the you know that fascinates me is the establishment of these norms and standards for concurrent functions. So. What does that mean in the absence of legislation? So, because it's your question. You didn't ask it.
I thought you would raise it.
What does it mean in the absence of legislation? You know, because the other spheres, other levels are spheres of government, so they make their own priorities, and I know that this has been a very frustrating area for the concurrent, what you call the functions, for the Department of the Department of Education, for example. And I think that honored members will remember the DG for health has been raising frustrations. Remember saying to us, at least the Health Act now has been signed, and therefore she thinks that things will be different. So, but just generally, what does this mean? So is there sufficient legislation to manage this process? The You said, DJ, there are about 23 evaluations that are being made. Can we get a list of what are these evaluations that are being made, and where the one evaluation? Did you get that report of the one evaluation? We didn't get it. The evaluation that was concluded. But I'll come to the boring question at the end. That of the capacity of the department, something that we really always have on. I mean, for me, and I think that for all of us, this is very important work that the department is performing. But with the current capacity, we do understand that the department is not working alone. But obviously, the department itself must have its own capacity to be able to ensure that these things are happening. You can't rely on what the provinces are doing or what. I think there must be in-house capacity that is built. But just the progress on the capacity building in departments for M&Es, are you making progress in that? I don't know if maybe it's early days to think that the MPET report will be able to reflect on that, but generally, are we making progress? And just the last thing, DM, that I would like to comment, you know, I think that as a committee, we have always been worried about the slump when you of transition from the fourth quarter to the first quarter. You know, every year, it's something that from departments, it's like a new year altogether. After the March spike, when you come to the first quarter, there's a slump. So what is the cause of this? Because it's supposed to be just a seamless transition, I think. I mean, I think that the department has not done bad on this, but how can we maintain that same level of expenditure from the first quarter to the last quarter? I don't know if did I talk about the outcomes? Yeah. There were supposed to be reports on the outcomes according to the APT, but I'm not sure if it indicates how many. I'll tell you now. But have you received those reports, or what is the progress in relation to the reports on the outcomes? Thank you, dear.
Can the DG deal with the substantive issues as an accounting officer, and then I'll come to those that might be a bit contentious or political? Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Honourable Members. I think what I'd like to just point out initially is that
you know, the other thing just I didn't understand totally is this evaluation, guidelines for assessments for HOD. So I know that I heard the PG explaining about this, but I didn't get clearly how, in the absence of the assessment tool, how do you assess them now? I didn't get clearly, what you explained. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. In the interest of not having too long a presentation, we took an approach of only focusing on the partially achieved and not achieved items in our presentation. I think in future reports we need to be more comprehensive and also cover the achieved items. I think that's what's lacking from the report. So we took it as given that everything that's in the APP which is achieved, we did achieve that, but I think we need to include it in our presentation as well. Several honourable members asked for clarity regarding the abolition of Programme 3. This was purely a matter of trying to make the management in the department more efficient and streamlined. So none of the activities that we're doing have been stopped. It mustn't be misunderstood as though we're stopping activities. All we're doing is shifting activities from one part of the department to others. So under this branch that was there for M&E Systems, we used to manage the Program of Action System, which is the website, and put all the information about progress and the outcomes there, and there's a unit which focuses on that. All we've done is move that unit with all its work and its budget to the outcomes branch in the interest of efficiency, because it works better if it's under the DDG for the outcomes and if it's under another DDG, because it's the DDG for the outcomes which produces the data. It's that branch which produces the data which goes to the POA. So we thought it would be more efficient and effective and work better if the population of the website is done under the guidance of the DDG for outcomes rather than a separate DDG for M&E systems. So there's only one position which has been affected by that move, and that is the DDG for M&E systems. And that the person who is occupying that post, the DDG, Renate Engeler, her employment in public service hasn't been affected, but simultaneously we got a request from Treasury to second her to Treasury to work with us on a project on expenditure reviews. But everybody else in that branch, where technically the branch was abolished, has been moved to other parts of the department. All the work is still being done. The same work is still being done, but it's being moved. It's being done in other parts of the department. So we were just trying to make the department more efficient managerially in terms of making it a bit more streamlined and to have the functions in the right place in the department so that managers can be held accountable so we could improve accountability within the department. So it hasn't resulted in any change to our overall budget. Our budget hasn't been reduced. All the money that was allocated to that program still comes to the department. It's just been allocated to reallocated to other programs. So the money that was being spent on the POA is now part of the outcomes branch's budget. So no. Yes.
Sorry, just maybe for my own understanding. You're saying it's only this part of the small part that is affected, not the whole branch. The branch still exists, or it does not exist now. Ms. Engeler is gone, so now there's no what you call it.
No.
There's no M&E.
No. The chief directorate has been moved to another branch. So all the functions that have been done in that branch. The policy and M&E capacity building, the POA, and the geographic information system, they're all still happening in the department. All the people are still there. They're just reporting to different DDGs.
Chairperson, just for clarity on this, through you, if you allow me, I just find it difficult if the DG can just explain to us or elaborate a little bit more. It just said that it is to streamline management and that the DDG for Program 2 will take over for outcomes. But the shifting, the reshuffle of the money goes to 1, 3, 1, 2, and 4. Now, if it moves, you know, it's been split through the three programs, how can it be that only the DDG for outcomes has been taken over? Maybe I don't understand it correctly.
Let me just reiterate what you're saying, Honorable Van Dijk. In other words, we're saying to us, this branch we saw as one of the main, what you call it, branches, you know? Now it's going to be a sub, what you call a branch, elsewhere, under another main branch. Honorable Fula?
Sir, I just want to understand. Yes, sir. I just wanted to add on that to say, I don't understand. I thought that this program, it's a custodian of the M&E itself, because that is the one that is guiding them in terms of capacity building. It creates policy platform. You know, now if you give it to other people, and you are the one who's supposed to be holding it, when are we? When is it going to get a priority? Because now it has been split in another department. I thought that it's a program on its own, because when I look at its coordination and support, it's talking about coordination and support branch is responsible to create policy platform for the government, you know, capacitate. Remember, it's a new thing, so it also needs to capacitate the M&E development and provide performance data support to the departments and other clients. Now, if you take it out and you make it sub whatever, is it going to have an impact? Because I thought that this is a good program to make sure that things are happening. Now, if we split it to other, where the priority side of it, will it be given a priority? I don't think so.
If the DG can explain the functions of that particular branch in detail, and then the movement of the functions, whether indeed the focus will be out of it if they moved to this particular branch and so forth, and then probably that understanding. And also I think there's an element of abolish that might have also made people then to say, you abolish. you know, and then therefore the word abolish, and I don't think it was correctly used in the document, but the movement of the functions now being managed somewhere else, streamlined, and how that is going to have an impact, but still not lose on the mandate and then the focus of the department. So if we can allow that really to be explained, and if the explanation is not enough, members can then really come back, and I think it's in that. Otherwise, we might then be asking, can he then they should just zoom into that.
No. I just wanted to say, these functions that the program has been sent to, those programs got their own functions. That's my understanding. They've already have their own baby. Now we are bringing another baby on top. It's too much now. It's no more. So I'm just saying to say, each and every program has got its own function. Now we take other functions and put them to the other program, which makes it heavier. Because now I believe that it will lose focus, but I'll listen to the DG's explanation. Maybe I'll understand.
Thank you, Chairperson. This slide tries to explain it. The M&E systems program, which as the DM says, perhaps the word abolition is a bit misleading, because it implies that the activities are stopped and the budget is stopped, which is not the case. It's just a restructuring of the department. All the same activities are carrying on. So there were three main activities carrying on under Program 3, which is POA data support. And that part has moved to Program 2. Then there's another part, which is the geographic information system. If that part has moved to Program 1.
Maybe for our sake, if you could say that POA data support is responsible for 1, 2, 3, and therefore,
okay.
and where it is moved
okay.
now, perhaps there's okay. a link with it, that, so that it must make sense to us
okay.
as well.
But POA data support is what I was talking about there. That's the part of the department which captures progress against the outcomes on the POA system on the website. So that part was in the separate program, and it was basically capturing data on progress against the outcomes onto the POA website. And we moved that to the outcomes program because we thought it's better located there. because the outcomes program is the part of the department that's generating data on progress against the outcomes. So it's better to also have the unit which is capturing that data under the same DDG who's responsible for generating the data, so that DDG can be held accountable for generating the data and capturing it on the system and making it public. Then the second part of the work of that branch was to run our geographic information system, which is basically developing geographic information, spatial data about a whole lot of information about health and basic education and spatial data. So in other words, so that we can have information on progress against the outcomes per province, per municipality, etc., on a spatial basis. And that geographic information systems part was providing a service to the other parts of the department, the outcomes part and the management performance assessment, the frontline service delivery, etc. That geographic information system is basically IT work. So we thought it would be better to have that geographic information system, given that they're basically IT people, to have it in Program 1 under our chief information officer, so that we can improve our management of our information technology in department and have all the IT-related staff under our chief information officer. Then the third part of the work of that, the remaining part of the work of that branch, was the chief director for M&E policy and capacity building. And once we'd moved the POA data support to the outcomes branch and the geographic information system to the ICT branch, which there was very good reasons, just having one chief directorate for policy and capacity building isn't sufficient to justify having an entire branch. So we then needed to incorporate that chief director of policy and capacity building in one of the other branches. So we incorporated it into Program 4, Institutional Performance Monitoring. We think that does not create an overload on the DDG for institutional performance monitoring, because that DDG only has two chief directors now reporting in that branch. So we've actually tried to make the department more efficient and streamlined. It's still built doing the same activities, but we think that it's now functioning better. As one of the members pointed out, as a new department, when we initially planned the department, we thought that it would make sense to have a separate branch for M&E systems. But as we implemented and we found some problems with regard to, for example, the relationship, particularly on the POA data support, having that separated from the people who are producing the data in the outcomes branch, produced difficulties in terms of ensuring accountability for timeliness, putting of all the progress on the POA website, we decided to make these changes in order to improve the efficiency and functioning of the department. But they haven't had any implications in terms of us carrying out the important work that we're doing, and the M&E policy and capacity building is still given the same prominence and importance in the department as it was before. Shall I move to the other questions?
Thank you, Chairman. I just say that I want to congratulate the department that they're thinking, and they're not just carrying on in the old ways. They're thinking and they're doing things in a different way, and it's in a better way. It's streamlined. Well done. Thank
you. I think there was a misinterpretation of slide 3. We're not saying, this slide isn't trying to show any shift in functions. One of the members said that we'd move citizen-based monitoring. We didn't move citizen-based monitering. What this slide is showing is trying to show the green items in this slide are new things that we started to do in this financial year. So they're additional things. So the citizen-based monitoring wasn't being done before last financial year. It's a new initiative that we started under Program 4 related to monitoring of frontline service delivery. I'll ask Cardell, our head of HR, to talk about our a performance in terms of performance agreements in the department when I finish going through the other items. There was a question about what the committee in the department is doing to improve our expenditure versus our budget. What we do is on a monthly basis, our chief financial officer gives our management meeting a detailed report of expenditure versus budget and commitments versus budget, and then we interrogate it collectively, and we ask where there's areas of under expenditure. The manager responsible in that area needs to give explanations of the reasons of the under expenditure and what they're doing about it. And if it looks like the under expenditure isn't being adequately addressed, then we agree collectively to take actions such as moving money to other parts of the department where the money will be spent timely. And that works quite effectively in terms of ensuring that managers do focus on monitor their expenditure against their budgets, because they know that there's a risk that if there isn't adequate expenditure, then the money will be moved to where it can be spent. There was a question as to whether the other programs where we've made these function shifts in terms of what we've just been talking about have the capacity. I think the simple answer to that question is yes, because there haven't been any changes in capacity. All the people who were doing this work have just moved to report to other DDGs. And we think that the DDGs for Program 2 and Program 4 are not overloaded with work in terms of their areas. And we do have the right ratio of chief directors to DDGs. I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding that there was a question that we've only achieved 10 of our targets. That was only for one of the programs. The key slide for the department as a whole, for all our quarterly targets for the department as a whole, is the summary slide, which shows that we've achieved 40 of our 56 targets for the department as a whole for the quarter. I'll also ask Cartel to address the question of what were the reasons for the people who left the department. What are the reasons that people give for who resign, or, as I mentioned, some of them get promotions or get other jobs. And there was a question about the Free State Evaluation Plan. We are actually pleased with the progress with the development of the evaluation plans at provincial level. KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape have plans in place and are implementing them now. And I don't think it's that Free State is behind. We initially started with two provinces, and then we meet regularly with all the offices of the Premier, and we ask two provinces to volunteer to be pilots to develop the first provincial plans, and Western Cape and KZN volunteered. And then we went back and we said, we're ready to move now and work with the third province as well, and then Free State volunteers. So things are progressing well, and we hope that in time all the provinces will have provincial evaluation plans. There was a question about our reliance on donor funding and whether it's sustainable. We do have an immediate problem this financial year, in that we didn't get the rollovers that we requested for the two projects that we started late last financial year, that we were requested to do later in the financial year. Because those are projects with a definite end date, I don't think it's going to cause an ongoing pressure on our budget. And we do have multiple year donor funding. It varies. Some of it is 1 year, some of it is 3 year. We can provide the details if necessary, but for example, we have a 3 year donor funding from the Canadians. So we have sufficient to deal with the current issue of the projects which we were asked to do, which we hadn't planned for. I think in future we'll have to be careful about taking on projects that we haven't planned for in our APPs and budgeted for. Sometimes they're unforeseen, and in that way we would need to be careful that we remain within our budget and that we don't take on too many unforeseen projects and unplanned for projects, as we did with the 20-year review and the norms and standards project. The chairperson asked me to explain a little bit more about the norms and standard projects that we doing. Chairperson, we're not developing norms and standards yet. The work that we're doing is aimed at answering exactly the kind of questions that you were asking. Because there was a discussion in FOTAD about the interventions that have taken place by national government in Limpopo in the Eastern Cape, and there was a detailed discussion about the lessons from those interventions and the challenges that were experienced during those interventions. And as part of that discussion, there was also a discussion about the challenge of national departments and ministries being held accountable for performance even when the delivery happens at provincial level, and how we can manage that in practice. And as a result of that, one of the issues that came up was that the question was raised is there are constitutional provisions for norms and standards, and it may have been that the drafters of the Constitution had in mind that these kind of issues of how national departments and ministries can ensure that there's a minimum quality of service delivery at provincial level. It may have been that the drafters of the Constitution had in mind that norms and standards would be the mechanism through which national departments and ministries could ensure a minimum level of quality of service at provincial level. And the question was asked is, are we adequately using the constitutional provisions for norms and standards in order to ensure that? And FOSAD asked DPME to work with the concurrent function departments to look at those questions and to find answers to those questions and to come back to FOSAD and later to Cabinet with an analysis of the degree to which we are effectively using norms and standards for concurrent functions and the potential for using norms and standards more effectively to ensure minimum quality of service for concurrent functions. So we're in the process of doing detailed, we're collecting information across the concurrent functions, across 10 concurrent functions, looking at what norms and standards are in place, what kind of norms and standards in place, are they legal norms and standards or are they informal norms and standards, how effective are they. It's a project which is in progress. We've collected the information. We're now busy analyzing the information, and in time we will have a report on the analysis and with recommendations as to how the use of norms and standards could potentially be improved for concurrent functions. Chairperson, as I indicated in the presentation, we have previously sent a progress report on the evaluations to the committee, but we'll send an updated progress report immediately to the committee, and perhaps with a suggestion that we be given an opportunity to come and brief the committee on progress with all the evaluations. Chairperson, you asked whether or not we're making progress in terms of building capacity for M&E in departments. Interestingly, the impact report that we will be presenting to you shortly does indicate that there is some progress, that there is some improvement with regard to monitoring and evaluation management practices in national and provincial departments, which is not necessarily attributable to our capacity building work, but it does indicate that there is some improvements. Yes. You also asked me, Chairperson, to clarify the issue of our role in the assessment of DGs. Currently, DGs are assessed by committees of ministers and deputy ministers, and the secretarial function is provided by the Public Service Commission. after discussions in FOSAD, we took a proposal to cabinet that the in future the chairs, the panels which assess DGs should be chaired by the DG in the presidency, and that those panels should then make recommendations to ministers for decisions with regard to the performance of their DGs. And we also proposed to cabinet that the secretariat function to support the DG in the presidency should be provided by DPME. Cabinet approved that, but on condition that DPSA issue a new policy, because DPSA is the legal custodian of the function of performance assessment, and the current system is based on a DPSA policy. So legally, we can only change the system if DPSA issues a new policy in terms of the Public Service Act. And DPSA has not yet issued the new policy, so we can't implement that cabinet decision. But because there was a cabinet decision, we put it in our POA, in our APP, that we would be implementing this function, and we put a couple of targets for us to implement this function. But in my report, I indicated that we haven't implemented the function because DPSA has not issued the new policy. And until DPSA issues the new policy, the current system will remain where the DGs are assessed by committees of ministers and deputy ministers with the secretariat function provided by the Public Service Commission.
If that's maybe you will come in, if I may ask, in principle, is DPSA agreeable to the to these guidelines, to coming up with these guidelines? Also, is it obliged, if it has agreed to do that, I don't know the time frames, because maybe when it was put in the APP, the expectation was that they would come with those guidelines, but they haven't. Are there time frames?
It was based on the decision of the cabinet, and in which there was concurrence, and so there was no issue. And then the DPME then proceeded by putting it in the annual performance plans. But unfortunately, that has not happened, and therefore we can't move, having put it in the APP. And there are engagements going on between the DPSA and DPME to then begin to find as to how far is the issue, what are the issues, if any. And then that matter will then go back to the cabinet soon, and for the cabinet to get a report on their own decision as to whether there's progress or no progress. So we are indeed, have prioritized the matter for processing, so that the DPME does not look bad in terms of its annual performance plans and so yeah. So I think that's the issue then. But we are attending to the matter, and we'll then come back as soon as those issues have been attended to. When the cabinet took a decision, obviously there was no time frame. It just said, can this be done? And everybody says yes, and then we moved on, and then we started planning around those particular issues. On the other issue that I think we should, Sean has answered on it, is the norms and standards, and I think we all agree that the study will bring evidence-based information, and then we'll then begin to share on those experiences, the challenges, and so forth. Because if you don't do that study, the temptation to resist, that I'm another sphere of government constitutionally, we are encroaching or we are interfering, as will always be the first line of defense. But then once you then bring evidence to say, look here, the lack of norms and standard or them not being legislated has led to provinces development to be unequal, and therefore that then results in other provinces being defined as very, very poor, not on the basis of other aspects, but on the basis that the government, the on concurrent issues probably we are not moving in the same line in as far as nonsense standards are concerned. And I think the study therefore will then help us to sober up and ensure therefore that we're able then to see the mechanisms, and if legislation is the route, then let's go for that particular route. It does not hamper on the three spheres of government existing, but then it's more about delivering the quality of delivery, as you said, around the issues of nonsense standards. And then there was a last point that I wanted to also bring around the capacity of the department. It's a matter that indeed is being discussed and then raised at the highest level, and because it's even raised at the highest level, not yourselves only raising it, because you said it's a boring matter now for you. So that's what you said when you introduced the matter, another boring matter, and you looked at me, and then I looked at you, and then I'm just indicating to you that allow the process of engagement and discussions to unfold, because once you say your capacity is, we need it, definitely. But then Treasury ought then to be engaged based on the case study, and the case study was done, negotiations done, but at the level of the officials. Now, I've indicated to the department that let's then bring the ministers to come together to also engage further on the issue, and then also then, you know, raise it to the highest office, because the highest office is raising a similar issue as you are doing as the highest office in Parliament through the committee system that you have, that indeed, you know, this matter be looked at loan. So I think there is an attention on the matter, be assured. So don't get bored about it. It may take time, but we're indeed on it in terms of that capacity, because monitoring is now be seen as a valuable tool in government, and then I think society is now beginning to appreciate its importance. Though complex as it may, but I think it's maturing now, and I think the need is being realized that we really need this performance monitoring and evaluation systems if we are to deliver on our mandate. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Honourable members and our Deputy Minister, with regards to the performance agreements, we didn't mention it in the presentation because with respect to that target, we achieved it. All officials in the department did conclude their performance agreements by the due date. So that is why we didn't actually indicate it in the presentation. But as our DG indicated, I think in going forward, even with targets achieved, we will report on. With respect to the turnover rate, the main reason that we have found in the department is better remuneration. In terms of the first quarter that I've mentioned, five out of the individuals that left based on promotional opportunities within the public service. One was due to personal reasons. However, we also did an analysis from the time of the department and looking at the turnover rate, and this reason has constantly come up, better remuneration. The category of employees, it is in our support services. That's the majority of the officials leaving. It is at our lower level of staff, more at your production level. And with regards to the support services, because of the job hopping in the public service, people are leaving for promotional posts in other departments. We did look in terms of our levels across benchmarked with the public service, and our levels in the support services are in line. DPSA has recently introduced benchmark jobs for the production levels and supervisory levels. So we're hoping this will address in time the job hopping that has been seen in mainly at the lower levels and the support levels. So that's basically it in terms of the main reason for the turnover rate. Thank you.
DG, you're done? You're not done, DG. You're not done, DG. There are questions that are outstanding, progress on the municipal performance and what they call on those pilot sites and the outcomes question and the evaluations. Sorry? What? Oh, yes. No. Yeah, the evaluation one was, yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Honorable Snell, you wanted to there's a question
out there? Okay. My question is out of standing, Chair. Thanks.
The one for intergovernmental things is being addressed at the highest level, the PM said.
I'm not sure if that's exactly it. Repeated. I was speaking about the outcomes, Chair, and how the various different departments are currently working in silos, but the outcomes of some of the departments are dependent on others performing, and therefore, and also the IT systems to be able to measure it, Treasury putting the frameworks in place. How does that monitoring of your outcomes also assist in the performance monitoring and development systems of government? So, in the department's opinion, what can be done to be able to improve the situation? Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a very important question and a very difficult question. And it's not a problem which is unique to South Africa. We've been looking at the issue of coordination internationally as well, because it's very relevant to us for the outcomes. And we've been reading about how other countries experience this and how they manage it and how do they try and address the issues being raised by Honourable Snell. And what we found is that we're not aware of any countries which have come with a perfect solution to this problem. All countries seem to struggle with it. And basically, what we found is that if you read the literature on it, it generally says if we follow certain principles, you'd have a better chance of success. And those principles are things like that coordination should take place at the lowest level possible. You shouldn't overburden high-level decision structures with lower-level decisions and coordination. You should encourage officials at a lower level and who are implementing to communicate with each other and coordinate at a lower level. You also need to develop a culture of coordination in the public service, which means a culture of people working together, of not working in silos, of communicating with each other, quite a lot of countries have said that you need to overcome this. It's a cultural problem, management cultural problem of people working in silos. I think I can safely say that we don't think that that IT systems are the biggest challenge or the main solution. The lack of a culture of coordination and the lack of people coordinating efficiently and effectively are more important than are a bigger obstacle to effective coordination than IT issues. Because even if you have a very good IT system, if you still don't have a culture of coordination, if you still don't have people communicating with each other, the IT system isn't going to help. We think that the introduction of the outcome system and the delivery agreements has gotten departments to work together more. I think there is evidence that the focus on outcomes, which are all cross-cutting across departments, has resulted in an improved coordination between departments, and ministers are working together more and reporting collectively to cabinet on issues which are cross-cutting. There are still remaining challenges. There are a lot of areas where coordination could improve more. We do definitely think that there could be much more coordination at a lower level on the ground. For example, quite a few infrastructure projects and housing projects, human settlements projects are delayed because of a lack of coordination. So there's delays because of lots of different departments and spheres of government have to work together, like a human settlements project where you need approvals from ESCOM, you need approvals from the municipality, a whole lot of departments work together. We find particularly at that level coordination isn't as strong as it could be, and it's because officials are working in silos and simply don't have a culture of being responsive to each other and picking up the phone and talking to each other. So we need to work towards developing that culture and improving coordination there. We are currently carrying one of the evaluations. When we report to you on our evaluations, you will see that one of the evaluations that we're currently engaged in is an evaluation of government's coordination systems at a high level, particularly the cluster system and the implementation forums for the outcomes. And we hope that some useful lessons will come out of that evaluation, and some recommendations will be made to Cabinet for ways in which we can improve the coordination systems. With regard to the municipal performance assessment process, I'm not sure of the exact progress to date off the top of my head. I know we are talking to about 10 municipalities with regard to piloting the implementation of the tool. I think it's in process in about 3 or 4, but we can send you a detailed progress report on giving you the names of the municipalities in which we're focusing and the progress in each municipality with the assessment process. Similarly to this process that we're doing at the national and provincial level, it has first a self-assessment phase, which must be done by the municipality, and then we'll check their self-assessment on the basis of evidence and moderate the results of the assessment. It's more complicated at municipal level because with national and provincial departments, we're doing it with the officials, with the DGs and heads of department and the other officials, but at municipal level, the council needs to be involved as well, and the various committees in the council. So it is proving to be a more lengthy, more complicated process at municipal level. But I suggest, Chairperson, we send you a progress report on the municipal assessments. Then finally, you also asked what we had some targets related to reports on the outcomes, the quarterly reports that we do to Cabinet on progress against the outcomes. Again, we didn't report on that because it was achieved. We did submit all the reports as planned. And we, as I indicated, we have, on the basis of those reports, we have been updating the POA where the public can get a view on progress against the delivery agreements.
Thank you very much. Another snap?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, DG, for that answer. I understand the issue of a culture or work culture being critical to improving any organization's performance. But I think that the current IT systems that we have in place can be improved, and I would believe that the department would also think that. So I don't know where the current, who's driving that process at the moment within government to analyze this. You want to improve culture, but there also needs to be a support system to be able to, when that culture improves, how to deliver better. But that is one thing. The other issue is that Treasury sets currently the framework in which APPs must be done, reporting must be done. But does that framework currently speak to yourselves and what you're trying to achieve? Or could that be improved? See, that was basically my question. And then also an interesting evaluation would be for you to do is looking at the PMDS system and the impact it's had in improving departmental performance since it was implemented. And I'll almost guarantee that your main result there will be the only thing it's really done is to enable departments to pay bonuses. Because it's not being done to do what it's supposed to do. And why? Because you can't measure it effectively. How do you measure effectively the targets in your APP? So that's the kind of, so you're getting different people setting frameworks for yourselves, how you must achieve something, and then you've got a system that's in place that is very hard to measure, as far as I'm concerned. Okay? So that would be an interesting evaluation. But just to take a bite at the... That's all right. My chest needs a cigarette. But the yeah, I was undercover. With the norms and standards, I don't know if that study is also going to look at, if we start to have norms and standards put in place on concurrent issues, what is the point of having a department that's standalone further down the line? Or should that be a department that implements norms and standards? How the budgeting is going to change? Because if you're going to start budgeting for norms and standards, the current system of budgeting would have to change. I mean, based on a mathematical formula, it's very different to be able to address backlogs in the Eastern Cape than they took Gauteng, for example. You know? And where do you stop those norms? And, I mean, where does that filter down to? Also, with regards to, I mean, your norms and standards, I would imagine, would have also been put in place so that when Section 100 and Section 139 get implemented, there's something for the NCOP to measure the improvement against in the Section 100 to be able to lift that Section 100, you know. Because now what you're measuring against, you're measuring against an assumption of sorts, okay. So those are just things and with cooperative governance then, if you've got norms and standards, how does that impact on cooperative governance? So the whole framework, the superstructure of governance, is this superstructure that's been designed with all these different things that we're trying to do, is here? Do we need to try and force our way through this quagmire of things that were negotiated, or do we relook at the design to be able to make it flow better? So anyway, those are just some comments, Jay.
Comments. And I said, I'm sure DM would like to comment on that, to respond. Yeah.
Look. I mean, you have raised quite complex issues, and obviously, as a dynamic society that wants to perfect itself in the evolution and also in the delivery, you then learn from your own experience, and in that experience there will be challenges, and then we then begin to look around and see how other people dealt with the issue and how best can we deal with the issue under whatever normal circumstances and objective concrete conditions on the ground. And then the norms and standards, I don't see it as a DPME matter that will then come as a big brother and say, we say departments must then begin to look at that function. Like health has moved, there was a resistance a bit when the health went in to say we therefore want to co-appoint hospital CEOs. There was a big resistance in the provinces because at the time there was no norms and standards around the issue. And then they then realizing that through negotiation is not working, the minister then said, let me go and amend the legislation. And then in amending the legislation, he was able then, you know, to pronounce, and then indeed now there's cooperatives around that particular issue. They are co-appointing so that they team from national sits in the panel that then determines who becomes the CEO. Because in the past, then the CEOs are appointed, they didn't even have any medical experience, and then you are given a hospital to run, and then there was a collapse of administration and systems in the hospitals. Now, to turn around that particular issue, you have to do so. Education is now also moving on the norms and standards on the main basic infrastructure. And then I think they've published them for comments and so forth.
And I hope, therefore, that the norms and standards will be within the cooperative governance module, where the mandates as constituted, and we're not changing the constitution, just to say how best can we work and perform so that then the quality of the service that we're delivering is as low. So let's then continuously really learn and so forth. And what the study does by the DPME is just to go across governance so that, because when you say go and then analyze and then give us the problem, education will just look at education, whereas DPME has the capacity of looking across the entire governance system, bring the study, deliver the study, and the departments will then take that study based on the decisions that after discussion, and then being, go and remodel their own types of norms and standards and so forth. Where it works well, they say if it's not broken, don't fix it. But where it's broken, obviously it ought to be fixed. So that we could then move as a nation and perfect on deliver. On the IT issue, I think I agree with you that technology is advancing and it's moving faster than some human beings themselves. So whilst indeed, you know, human beings feed information into technology, but also there's an advancement on the side of technology that we might then from time to time have to look at the models, because indeed people are doing approaching performance monitoring. I've referred some to the DG to say, look at these particular proposals. They seem to be bringing something that is more revolutionary advanced. And then they think DPME, probably in one of the presentations that they made to me, is the home and the house where it could then, you know, begin to reside on that particular technology. It gives information, geographic location, what is happening there, how many schools are there, whether the school construction has started, where is that construction, what are the delays, if any delays. It feeds, but obviously it's human beings that are feeding it, because they have people all over the country that are moving around word by word, mm-hmm. every day feeds in information into that. Probably government might then, instead of us employing people, we might then have them then to say, okay, that's a very good, wonderful technology, but it's driven by people, as the DG was saying. So that's the area, but whether it's located in the Treasury or it's located in the DPME, so those are the matters that we could then look within. Although those people were saying it's monitoring, because you need to know what is happening on the ground at the press of a button. So you ought to develop your technology, obviously, then to be able to take the advantages that it offers, you know, to society. So let's continue to engage and then to see what can work and what cannot work. But obviously, I will not be able to respond to all of the questions. Some I'll take as comments, food for thought, and then I think you are now beginning to be able to help and say, let's think even broader than some of the issues that I did. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DM. I'm sure the colleague was raising it because, obviously, as departments and all of us as national, we get frustrated that national departments have a responsibility to set policy. But when it comes to implementation, somebody else prioritizes, you know, it becomes a problem, and then find that the resources that are redirected elsewhere. There are no proper guidelines. This will really go away, what you call a great deal to help. But at the end, I think that we're trying to wind up. I don't know if you have some... okay. No, it's fine. But I think that the issues that we discussed, about the report, I think that it's very much called an interesting build report. But... if someone surrenders, you know, you don't act like the Central African Republic soldiers, you know. Even if you surrender, they still shoot you. It doesn't help, you know. Yeah. I think that it's interesting. There are new things that are coming every day, and part of that, I think it goes to these quarterly reports. And I was listening to the teacher in terms of saying perhaps how do we improve these reports? How big will that report be? If, for instance, you put everything here that you have achieved. For instance, some of the things are these your municipal performance and service report. Obviously, we have an interest in what you are doing as a committee to support the department, including on this municipal performance and what. I mean, there were a lot of work is done there at municipalities, so we can't leave them outside. And the process, everything that we find
it is. Could be a standalone item in relation to what the AG also said about municipalities. Probably who are the
Now, the DG has promised that we can invite him, the department, to come and present on that. But also the some of the reports we know that you're putting on website, but it would be useful that we, as the committee, we get the reports like this outcomes report. If they are submitted formally to the committee, to Parliament, so that we also keep abreast with the developments. The issue at the end that we'll really monitor is this program 3. You know, I think that we had the explanation, but I think we'll need really to understand more if the functions that have been transferred elsewhere, and then now it means that they've been abolished. What are the implications? About these implications. Maybe as time goes on, as a committee, we'll understand. But for now, I'm not sure that.
They need to bring the structure now as designed.
Yes, that's correct. I think you have summed up it well at the end to say that issue of the mandate, because we see it as a flagship, what you call it. We saw it as a flagship program. Even the name of the department is performance monitoring and evaluation. Now you remove the other part and say, no, you locate it elsewhere. I think that's where we have reservations as a committee. And I think that then the last thing is that maybe we'll come back to the department around those sites which have been visited, so that maybe together we could go, or as a committee, we can make a follow-up on some of the sites that we have already visited. And that's the last thing, the end that is there, is the, what do you call it, DG SME? What do you call it? The South. What? Samia. Wow, okay. Oh, not Samosa, eh? Okay. Yeah. The, we're looking at the cost of that. I don't know, maybe the people who are organizing can. The idea of the department was that it would invite one person and then sponsor that person. But
to us as a committee, I mean, this is a learning, what we call a curve of monitoring and evaluation. It's a new thing in South Africa, and would have loved to expose all the members to it. I don't know if the budget would allow, the staff was telling me that there's also cost for registration and everything. I'm not sure if there's no exemption, you know. But maybe we could look at those things like...
Because that we are continuously sponsoring you, and you are independent of oversight gets led. So you need to balance your arguments too.
I hear that, because, I mean, we have been engaging the whole morning today. That's for the quarterly report. And, so we treat those things differently. You know, someone else at the M, when I was still in that office, he used to understand things differently. I don't think now he has changed now, because he's shifted now. He should. Yeah, I mean. Well, I think that it's understood, but if sometimes there's no sponsorship, members might not be exposed. Might not be exposed in these things. So that is a choice that we have. And to us, I mean, with the relationship that we have developed, I don't know if sponsorship alone would be. I don't want to use the other way, the other name that I use elsewhere. You know. Can be equal to those things, but it would enhance the work that is being done by the department and all of us. DM, thank you very much.
You were going to congratulate us on the vacancy rate that we are below, and then also on the expenditure that, you know, coming out, you know, better than last year.
Now, the Honorable Snell spoke about the culture that DG was referring to. That is not in our culture to say you have done well, you know. all that we have, we don't have seats, we only have a whip, you know, that's all we have. Now, I had noted it somewhere there that at least there's an improvement. I had written another word. I'm not going to tell you. I squashed it and wrote instead improvement. So that so now there is... Yeah, so that you don't want to call it relax, you know. But now there's definitely improvement. But also at the end, I think that we are pleased that this question of capacity, because it's being addressed at higher levels, than we are doing. I think that it's music to our ears, because we would like the department to succeed. You know, it must succeed. So, and thank you very much, DM, that you always avail yourself to our meetings when you have time. Yes, when you have time, we really appreciate that. And on that note, I would like to thank the department, but the meeting is not over yet. You are invited to lunch. That breakfast now has turned to to lunch. You can have. Honorable sir, I want to get your direction. Remember that we still have that report of Limpopo that is it's outstanding. In fact, one thing that I was really
like us to do now is that I think the members got the minutes of the, what date is that, the 20th of April. Yeah. Can we, you don't have a quorum.
If the DM stays, he can make a quorum for us. As far as the Limpopo visit is concerned, I didn't attend, so I can't do anything. I can't move. I can't say anything about it. Whether you're lying or not in the report, I wouldn't know. So there's no purpose of my attending that specific.
Now, it's unparliamentary lying in the report. Now, we don't do that. It's not in our nature to do that. But I would really like the members to go through. Honorable Plum, are we having a meeting tomorrow? Yes. And tomorrow afternoon we have a sitting? Or can I make a proposal, perhaps, that maybe we come back, we look at the program and come back for... Oh, by the way, next week we... When? Between 1 and 2.
Do you think that we can do the report between 1 and 2?
Sir?
Advised here that if we meet tomorrow, there has to be application. Maybe what would maybe we could just defer it to the next term, you know. But you know something that Honorable Swart, whether you were part of it or not, something that I would really like us to consider when we make recommendations here is this question. Maybe we need to engage maybe with the department, with Treasury, around the fact that in the department there's a construction unit, about the implication of those things, but they're not necessarily part of the report. The report, I think, as it stands, can be passed. I'm not sure if how long would it take. How long does it take to apply for a?
That's my point here. I think what kind of application is now that you might have applied to application?
Can you speak? Yeah.
Jefferson. In order of the procedure, parliamentary procedure, we have to apply to the office of the House Chairperson if we want to meet and the meeting is not as part of, not on the program of the committee. It is possible, but we don't know whether we will receive that approval today.
Now we will we'll receive that approval. If the members say they can meet during lunch tomorrow, do I get the indication that the meeting would be filed, the proposal? Are we adopting the proposal?
Chairperson, you also made a proposal that it stands until the next term. It's also fine. You know, if it's difficult to get the application, I mean, whether we do it tomorrow or soon thereafter, you must decide.
Honorable Khaled Blom, maybe we should, I would like us to have time, you know, sometimes rush time, what you call it.
What I'm not sharing is maybe how vicious, am I right?
you were right, because if we don't adopt it, it has implications when we make requests, for instance, to do something else, and we have reports that are outstanding. So you're quite right. But I think that an hour to do the report, we're not going to do justice, you know. Unless honored members can say Friday is a working day.
With all due respect, you know, we've got the election is around the corner. We've got a lot of responsibilities in our constituencies as well. And we plan, you know, 10 to 14 days ahead.
But you are in Gauteng, you're not going to win Gauteng.
Well, yeah, no. I didn't say that. I didn't refer to Gauteng at all. I just refer, you know, normal responsibilities. So
okay.
I prefer that we can, as Honorable Gelderblom suggests, tomorrow between 1 and 2, because we will have time this evening and this and today and tomorrow morning to go through this. And if we are not finishing our caucus, me and the Honorable Swart can ask for an apology. So we can do it between 1 and 2.
Okay, we'll meet between 1 and 2. Can we all be here at 1 o'clock tomorrow? Honorable Swart can accompany us. We like your company. Honorable members, as I heard from this side, that you are invited to. There's no futile, what is it? Wasteful expenditure. No wasteful expenditure. There's a lot of lunch there behind you. So you are invited to lunch.
Chair, can I propose the adoption of the minutes that we have set up?
Yes, Chair.
Chair,
another confusion. Put for new committee or standing committee on application. So we report your reference a standing committee on appropriations of portfolio committee.
Hallo Mama. Hallo da.
Good morning.